This is CliffCentral.com.
Hey, good morning. Happy Monday. This is the Gareth Cliff Show without Gareth.
Hey, yo.
Yeah, and you started so late, see? He's such a badass.
Well, don't get me started, Ben. Just don't do
it. Yeah, and also, Ben, we may have been delayed by your late arrival.
We may or we were.
We do have proof of it because you messaged the group and said, I'll be a couple of minutes late.
Mm. Oh, so much of that group being the circle of trust then, Leanne. Oh. Right.
So I was saying to Sia, we were trying to figure out what's a couple. And by proper definition, a couple is two. And most countries in the world, when they say a couple of whatever, they mean two.
Yeah.
In South Africa, however, a couple means something completely different.
What does it mean to you? Or do you still stand by the definition?
I like the way you put it in terms of rank.
Yeah. So to me, if you were running late, you would say, for example, I'm running 2 minutes late. Right?
Yeah.
So the thing is, no one runs 2 minutes late. You generally always run 4 or 5 minutes late. But if you say that, then people think you're a weirdo. It's like, oh, I'm going to be 4 minutes late.
You see, then it is, if you say I'm running a few minutes late, in my mind, it's 3 to 5 minutes.
Mm.
Then if you say I'm running a couple minutes late, it's like 5 to 8 minutes.
And as true as Bob, you arrived at 8 minutes past.
Mm-hmm. So my rankings are...
All right, grasses.
It's just weird. No, we're not chastising you at all.
Tell Gareth.
No, we're not chastising you. The whole funny thing is the debate around the word couple. Mm. In South Africa, it means a lot more.
And then what's 10 plus minutes? You're just late.
You say 10, probably.
Like recently we've been having this whole thing about being honest and having discussions that are around like just not lying.
Saying what you mean.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. We all lie so much about the small things. Like, oh, I'm running 5 minutes late. I've just passed this place in the road. Meanwhile, you haven't got there yet. You're just saying where you would like to be. And that's what you're telling the story.
Yeah, but now there are things like find my friends. What? You've got to remember who's following you.
Sharing locations.
What is that?
Find my friends. I can at all times see where my family members are. And my friend.
Is it like a life-saving app? One of those.
I've only got one friend.
Oh, shame. Not laughing.
No, I promise I have more, but not all of them share their location.
Yeah, it's just a normal thing. That's it.
I just go by what my GPS tells me. If it says I'm going to be there at 10 past, I say I'll be there at 10. ETA 10 past.
I do get Ben's reasoning, because sometimes you think you'll sound weird by saying, oh, I'll be there in 17 minutes.
Yeah.
I'll be there in a bit. You see, they're also loose terms that cover you. I often use ish. I'll be there at 7-ish. Because 7-ish in my mind is 7:01 to 7:59. Mm. That covers my ish.
And not before.
No. But expect me there by like 20 past if I'm said ish. So what was the reason why you were late?
I couldn't find my office keys. Oh. So I'm...
Ben.
It's just this one. It's like, you know, like be late for a good reason. Don't be late for like the dumbest reason possible. Like it's just your keys. Always have your keys.
No, this is what happens when you have a big weekend.
I heard you were tucking into rosé while watching sport.
Rosé all day.
I mean, that's just a Sunday thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not so big. No, I probably drank more this weekend than I have in a while because I've been so poorly. So, yeah.
Hashtag thoughts and prayers too.
Yeah, which definitely didn't work, but it was fine. Thanks anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then yesterday there was some really good golf on. So I just, there was rosé in the fridge and I got into it.
Ooh, very nice.
But also, like, you know, rosé is always just like typecasters for summer, right? You can still get away with it.
Yeah, of course.
You can still get away
if you can drink white all year round.
Yeah, white hurts, though. Rosé and I get along well.
White hurts? What do you mean?
I don't know, it just does. Like, I've never been a Chardonnay fan. Like,
mm-mm.
The weird thing is, actually, Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, Chenins, they just don't work for me. It's a nice idea, but, like, I generally can just get by on rosé. And obviously very comfortable with my sexuality, so I've never had an issue with rosé either.
No, anything with an alcoholic percentage works for me. And I'm pretty late to this party. But this weekend I had, for lack of a better term, a very stupid weekend. It was just stupid. No responsibility at all. Going by whim, just having fun. I did stay relatively indoors. But somewhere over the course of the weekend, my friends and I decided to download one of those on-demand alcohol apps. We just thought, oh, of course.
Oh, yeah.
This is amazing.
I use it all the time.
I had never before.
Is it like Uber for booze?
You just
touch a button and someone drops off stuff.
It is.
Honestly. Yeah.
I know so, I'm late because they've been around for a long time.
Yeah. So, firstly, this came out first, but now I see that Mr. Delivery you can get from some Checkers.
Uh-huh.
You can get alcohol. But if it's closing time, because, you know, we're all Christian and you're not allowed to drink a lot on a Sunday.
Absolutely. Hallelujah.
If you phone this app or if you use this other app, which is purely alcohol and some tobacco and vape and snacks and that sort of thing.
Just random junk.
You can phone at 8 o'clock on a Sunday and you'll be cool.
So can you get your douche flute upgraded like on one of these things?
Yes.
Yes. And it's like a whole catalog that you go through, but just don't do it when you're slightly or properly intoxicated because you wake up the next day. I thought,
and obviously,
why
like, there's some
did
pretty,
I do all of this?
Some pretty heavy margin on this, or is it quite reasonable?
It's a heavy margin.
Yeah. which is fine, because that's the thing about booze. It's like, it's always been something that people can mark up because there's such a demand.
Yes. And they understand that.
Yeah.
They understand that.
Well, that looks like a delightful interface even a drunk could use.
Yeah.
Yes, because they have these big icons of like, okay, I want that one.
Yeah.
And you click away because it's so amazing.
That's
and so in
bad.
Like
I mean,
20 minutes, there's someone at your door.
No, the prices aren't too bad, but the delivery is quite hefty.
Oh, okay. So you're getting like an Uber rate on top of your 100% markup bottle of wine.
30 rand delivery fee, and then something called a service fee, which is 15 rand.
That's put in the piss. But yeah, I mean, look.
So for a 99 rand bottle of wine, you'll be paying 144.
Yeah. Well, look, Leanne just opened that app, and within 4 seconds, she was about to order another bottle of wine. So it's not hard.
I noticed they're closed right now.
That's not good enough. So, but like, it should be 24/7 to be really exciting.
Mm.
But
you know, for me, you can never really put a price to convenience, and
no,
that's what it is.
Absolutely.
And also, when you're drunk, you're drunk.
Exactly.
Everything's fine.
But it's also good for when somebody pitches up and they end up staying for a glass of wine, and you realize you're going to need more, and to just quickly make an order is just so much more convenient.
Well, one of those unplanned moments like I had. You were just chilling there one moment, and then you think, actually, let's make a bit of a night out of this, and you don't feel like driving, or no one can drive.
Yeah, I see. In my case, it's usually because I'm legally not allowed to drive to go and get more wine.
Oh.
So I have to order. It's either that or getting an Uber to take me there.
And that no one just deserves
I've
that.
I've got
indignity.
My pride, you know.
Yeah, that's almost like the Uber of shame, actually.
Yes. Yeah. I just saw the guys at the bottle store, please. I'll be 2 minutes.
But I'm just on the booze, you know, like a few weeks ago, I decided I was going to retire from tequila. Like, we've just had that time.
Mm-hmm.
I've retired.
You get to a certain age.
Yeah, I just, and then.
Wait, is this like completely, completely?
Yeah, I can't carry on. It hasn't worked. And I think, you know, you got to be honest with yourself at some stage.
That sounds like a bad divorce.
It is, but obviously, like, there's good tequila and then there's, like, shit tequila. But either way, I just realized the other weekend, there's something in tequila which just makes me, it just doesn't work.
It's the cactus.
What does it make you do?
It's not pleasant. Like, booze is booze, you know, you can stomach it, you get drunk and you carry on with life. But I've just got to be realistic.
Oh.
It's sad. So I used to love tequila.
This is a turning point in your life.
Mm.
Look, I've officially retired. So if you ever see me out and it's like, oh, we've got to have a shot, just let it be known. I'm not going to have tequila. You can say whatever you want. You can think whatever you want. I've retired. So.
I think we've all had our moments with tequila, though, where you just can't stomach it. At one stage, it would go down and it would just come up immediately. It was a waste of money.
I mean, I'm totally okay with the fact that I can never do recreational drugs again. Like, that's fine. Yeah, but then I just thought I always had tequila, you know, that was always going to be there for me. But no, Rosé it is. Rosé draft beer, that's me.
Rosé all day. No, I still haven't had that moment, so I'm pretty fine.
Well, it's because you're 20 nothing. I just hope you haven't had that moment yet.
Leanne, how was your weekend? What did you get up to?
I made use of my drinking app.
Yeah.
Are you still making use of it now? It
sounded like yeah. it. but no, sadly not. No, it was, I worked, so it wasn't really a weekend. It felt like any other weekday.
Mm.
But if you do that, you have a bit of a head start, a running start on Monday.
Yeah,
so
true.
It just makes it a little bit lighter.
Well, I also actually, you reminded me, because since I was on, it feels like a whole other different time zone, because I was awake in some portions, then, you know, I was partying all night in some portions, and like I ended up on Sunday morning, I was up at like 3 a.m., and I thought, well, I don't know what to do, and I don't want to just watch something on TV. I ended up answering some mails, but I thought, Sia, you don't want to be the freak who's sending emails out at 3 a.m.
Yeah, it's not a good
look. Not a good look. So I had like these stack of 20 mails sitting in my draft up until, you know, I thought, okay, it's reasonable at 9 a.m., then I can start sending them out. But don't you have those long stretches of working, and you're working into like a Saturday evening, and even if you don't think, you aren't judging yourself, but don't you think like other people are going, Leanne's popping us mails.
Yeah, and I have to think like that because, you know, a lot of the people I'm emailing are clients, and there's this debate. You don't want them to think, she's working on my stuff at the last minute, late at night, and working on the good clients during the day.
Or she's only working my stuff, so I'll make this bitch dance whenever I want.
There's so many different interpretations. Yeah.
Either way, you really shouldn't.
But I think you can, almost like with Facebook, you can schedule your mails to go off at a certain time.
Huh.
I haven't tried it because I don't really care.
Yeah, well, too much effort.
Leanne, if people can bring you booze from an app, I'm pretty sure scheduling emails isn't exactly a moonwalk.
Yes. So one of the things that I love to do over weekends, just guaranteed, one of two things. The first is just the pure joy of not waking up to an alarm clock.
Yeah.
It really just gets
not,
me going.
Not so joyous when you wake up normally at 3 without your alarm clock and you're like, damn it.
Oh, no, I don't have that. Nope, don't have that at all. And then the second thing is to not watch a lot of news, because I think, you know, every single day we come on here, we have to know what's going on, you know, at least just a vague idea of what's in the news and what's happening. So over weekends, I really do like to shut off and not really keep up with current affairs or whatever is in the news. But this weekend, I found out that I missed out on the second earthquake in California. So the first one hit, I think, on Wednesday or something, and we were discussing that on the show. But there was a second one, just this past Saturday, and now I also read up this morning that they want to declare a state of emergency. But I then was also seeing a lot of clips of people's reactions to the earthquake, because welcome to 2019, when everything is live and someone is recording something, and I felt bad laughing about it, but I think now we can laugh about it because we found out these people are safe. But I never thought about news anchors who are anchoring live news, and it just so happens that they're stuck in an earthquake. What would happen there?
Well, ideally for them, career-wise, this should happen, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, like, you don't want to just be the guy that's reporting from nothing. You want to be the person who's reporting an earthquake and you fall over.
Well, you also don't want to be the person who dies on live television. Well,
yeah.
Exactly. So
no, you don't want it to kind of go to
almost
dead air, literally.
Yeah, I mean, almost.
when you were standing there before.
Almost dying is okay.
So listen to these two. They're from CBS Los Angeles, and they're news anchors. They were minding their own business, anchoring the news, and the earthquake hit.
We are experiencing quite a bit of shaking. If you'll give us a brief moment here, we're making sure that nothing is going to come down in the studio here.
And it is going for quite a bit, everybody. It continues
to rattle pretty strong here. 8:21 here on the air. We're experiencing very strong shaking. Wow. I think we need to get under the desk.
All right, we're going to go to break.
We'll be right back after this.
Wow.
Jeez.
I feel so bad.
Under the desk.
Yes. And they're still being very professional, you know, like it's 8:21.
They're trying very hard.
The building is shaking. You guys would miss me if something were to happen here. And I often really do think about it. Maybe it is my paranoia, but I think we're live on air now. And what if an armed man were to walk up the stairs with a gun?
He's approaching us. We're going to hide under the desk.
I'm starting to think this is some sort of weird fetish that you have, like this.
The killer.
This criminal figure coming into your life mysteriously.
No, really, is it? No, I don't want to be swept away in the arms of a man with a shank, Ben.
Your recurring stories would suggest otherwise.
I'm just preparing myself. And here's someone else. This is like a big Instagram person who happened to be live on Instagram chatting to her followers when the earthquake hit as well. She realizes it. There's some silence.
It's an earthquake. It's a motherfucking earthquake. Bitch, do y'all feel that? The motherfucking windows is shaking on the barbershop and shit. Bitch, it's a big ass earthquake right now. Oh my God. Oh shit, Jesus, is this it? It's still shaking? Hold up, wait.
Welcome to 2019, folks.
Was she eating chips at one stage?
Or? Yes, you know, priorities. She was eating chips in the car, live on Instagram. That's when she realized the earthquake hit. Now
she sounds so intelligent. I really want to follow her.
Jesus, is this it right now? Talking to Jesus about the end. No, this is, it's like bizarre. It's unfortunate that this has happened. And who said it last week? Something along the lines of California's just treated like the stepchild of everything. But yeah, the second earthquake has hit. And we'll figure that out a little later about like what the impact was or how many people were injured. But it really must be scary.
Yeah, now there's a whole frenzy on social media with people saying these earthquakes are going to trigger the Yellowstone super volcano.
Oh gosh. And then the Yellowstone super dinosaur comes back to life.
Yeah. But the actual park where it's situated, it said there's absolutely no way. People are just trying to spread panic on social media.
Yeah, of course, because they're bored. I just see a pretty funny meme about the earthquake. It's a picture of Michael J. Fox, and it says, "What earthquake?"
And he's smiling away in it.
Where is Michael J. Fox?
Well, he's battling with Parkinson's, so he'd be so insensitive.
He's a mover and shaker. He's probably up to something.
I'm not going to have this moment.
Sending ripples through the celebrity world.
You know, the 90s stars are coming back. Wasn't his show rebooted at a point? What is he on? That big show in the 90s?
No.
It wasn't Full House, right?
It was before Full House. It was also, I'm sure it had Robin Thicke's dad.
Oh, Alan Thicke, yes.
I probably had him because he was in everything, actually.
Yeah, I feel like at a point they were discussing bringing it back, and then all of the cast members were...
Family Ties.
I think at a point they were discussing making a Family Ties reboot, but they're like...
Play the theme tune, Sia. Gosh, you're so bad at this hosting thing. You've got to play a theme tune when you talk about old shows. It's the law.
Sure. Let's just amuse yourself for 2 seconds while I make that happen. Now.
How about the hairstyles in Family Ties?
What was it about? Do you still remember?
Oh, it was about a family going through family shit. It was ultimately a dreadful show, but back in those days, we had nothing on TV.
He was the only normal-looking one.
Yeah, the rest...
Well, look at him now. I'm sorry.
I mean, that kid looks like one of those garbage pail kids. You remember those cards?
Those cabbage patch things.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, bad hairdos.
This is so bad.
Lots of colors.
Too many colors.
So many colors.
Colors that should never be in the same room together kind of colors.
Ben, are you happy now?
12 seconds too late, but yeah.
I bet we've been together. Oh, this sounds sweet.
Here comes a woman's voice. Always.
A million more. It's like I started breathing on the night we
kissed. And I can't remember what I ever did. Guys, can we make an opening sequence for the song, for our show?
Stop ruining the chorus. Yeah, I agree. I think we should make a 90s sitcom theme tune for the show.
Where a person at a time pops onto the... They, like, jump into the frame.
Yes.
And it says your name underneath.
I don't know if To No More Bullshit will work, but we need to put some thought into it.
And then also to take a team photo of, like, family ties, where we're all dressed in far too many colors and smiling awkwardly.
Yeah, it should end off with us all congregating on a couch... And we all link up in arms and we smile at the cat.
And then the dog jumps onto our laps.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know where this dog would come from. Wow, those are 90s looks.
But just look
at that. I can probably rustle up a hairdo of note.
Family ties.
But Michael J. Fox there looks like...
Yeah, he looked...
The image changed.
Of the American boy.
But, like, see, that's... He then, like, booked a whole bunch of movies in the back of Family Ties. And everyone else at Family Ties just kept, I don't know, hoping Family Ties never ended.
Faded into the distance.
And boy, did they. Boy, did they. All right, let's get the show started. Let's get the Monday started. Well, we have some news to get to. Anthea's popping by. We have Beyond Bitcoin as well to get into. So a lot of stuff just to get you informed and on the right track for Monday morning. So are you ready for the five things that you need to know?
So ready, Sia, and excited at the same time.
Wow, those are... A lot of feelings, Benjamin. Yep.
Well, that's all I have.
Okay. So we spoke about the earthquake in California. There was actually also another earthquake in Australia this weekend.
Yeah, no one cares about them.
How? Just like that?
Well, you can have an earthquake in Australia and nobody ever see it because there's all this place that doesn't get occupied.
What do you mean?
Or was it in a city?
Oh, well... I feel like you don't have enough empathy for the Australians in this case. But yeah, a powerful deep 7.5 magnitude earthquake struck. Off the coast of Indonesia and was felt as far as Australia. But authorities said it did not have the potential to cause a tsunami. So strong shaking caused alarm, prompting people to run out of their homes. This is what an eyewitness said, but there were no immediate reports of damage, injuries, or deaths, thankfully. So the quake struck first in Indonesia and was felt across northern Australia. And in Darwin, around 700 kilometers away from the epicenter, it hit at lunchtime and office workers sought safety outside, but no damages or injuries were reported. Someone who was on the scene said, "It's probably one of the strongest I've felt in my time here in Darwin. We ended up wandering outside for about 15 minutes to let things settle down."
Oh, that's dangerous because a crocodile can eat you in Darwin if you wander too far.
Rather stay in your house. You know what I'm saying?
Is it the earthquake or a crocodile? Like one of the two. Yeah. Something's got to give. Yeah.
Dangerous, yeah.
Yeah, this is proper scary. Shame, man.
Sorry, just staying with the shakes. You know that Michael J. Fox had his own sitcom in 2013, 2014?
Ben.
It was called The Michael J. Fox Show.
Ben.
And it was about a news reporter who retired after he was diagnosed with Parkinson's.
I do vaguely remember that.
Wait,
is this not a parody?
No, it's called The Michael J. Fox Show. Didn't last very long.
Mm.
But he played himself with the Parkinson's.
That sounds like a skit for Funny or Die. I did not hear about that.
Let me triple check this.
Okay then. Anyway, second story that you need to know this morning. Well, this story was broken over the weekend, but you'd hear about the death of Mandla Maseko. He was said to be the first black African in space, and he died in a motorcycle accident on Saturday night. This is what his family announced. Maseko was popularly known as Space Boy and Afronaut, and he beat 1 million people to become one of 23 people who won a seat sponsored by a private company on an hour-long trip back in 2014. That's it.
We have him on the show really early on in Cliff Central.
Hmm. Maseko was 30 years old and he was from Soshanguve originally, and he went to train as a private pilot and became a corporal in our South African National Defence Force. And as a public speaker and community worker, he worked to inspire many African children to pursue careers in science. This was also part of the statement that his family released. And back in 2016, he was honoured by the Gauteng Education Department and had the science building at the Curtis Nkondo School of Specialization named after him. The family continued in their statement to say, Maseko will be sorely missed. May Mandla Maseko's kind and beautiful soul rest in eternal peace. And details of his memorial service and his funeral would be announced during the course of this week.
Shane, that's sad. He sounded like he was a very important person, did a lot of good work.
Yeah, man. Third story that you need to know this morning. Well, e-tolls are still in the news, and the DA caucus leader, Solim Simanga, says the e-toll saga could have been solved as far back as 2014. Do you want to know why he says that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Finance Minister Tito Mboweni and Gauteng's provincial government were engaged in a Twitter war over the weekend. I don't know if you saw that, over the e-toll issue. And in his State of the Province address last week, the Gauteng Premier David Makhura said that e-tolls have no future in the province. But Makhura's comments were met with criticism from National Treasury. And on his Twitter account, Mboweni insisted that e-tolls won't be removed. Makhura hit back, saying Mboweni has no power on the matter as he's not the president. But now the DA
well played,
has entered.
Well played.
I still think it's a little exhausting that this is all playing out on social media, though. But now the DA entered the fray. The party says Mboweni's statement on Twitter confirms what it has said all along, that under the ANC, e-tolls are here to stay. And according to the DA, Mboweni, not Makhura, has the final say on the matter as he is the National Finance Minister. But the party says if e-toll gantries are still active by August, it will take steps to declare an intergovernmental dispute to have the system set aside. And Simanga says he believes the system is here to stay. To me, it sounds too much right now and still like a he said, she said, maybe if, and that one must, and a pointing of fingers.
Well, it's just yet another legacy of how incompetent, greedy, and shit the ANC is. And also, like, I've never known a single Tito to be successful at anything. From the Jackson through to now. So if this guy wants to be mouthing off on Twitter, I don't take him seriously.
Did you really have to bring Tito Jackson into this?
Well,
you know, he's just...
Sometimes, yeah, things, you know, you can link, join the dots in life.
But I...
Telling me this full in effect. What have you done? How can I take you seriously?
I also just don't like the fact that our ministers are on social media.
They have to be because they're celebrities. That's all they are in this country is they're celebrities. They think they're so important.
Red carpets and blue light brigades.
Yeah. So they have to be on social media.
I think it feeds the beast.
Feeds the egos.
In my opinion.
Sure,
and I don't think our ministers, or at least in their personal capacity, should be on social media. If there's a Department of Health social media account, if there's a Department of Sports social media account, and someone properly manages that, sure, and so be it. But, you know, to see Tito Mboweni and what he's cooking and the latest term he's learned from Kigali, it's like, okay, and then what? Because right now I'm like, couldn't you be doing something better with your time as opposed to just trolling people?
Stop thinking politicians have a purpose in this country of ours, yeah? They're parasites, that's all they are.
And I just have...
Like that overgrown man-child who's now Minister of Transport, he played dress-up over the weekend. He dressed up like a traffic cop.
Is that what he did?
Such a child.
No, I didn't see that.
And I know what you're saying, but Ben, he's the Minister of Transport. He's getting involved. Yeah, whatever. That was purely a photo op for likes. Tell me he gives a toss about things. If he did, blue light brigades would be thrown away. If he did, taxis would actually get, like, come to heel.
There would be something more. Yeah. Anyway. All right, moving on with the news that you need to know this morning as well. Fourth story that you need to know this morning. Well, 3 years after the Life Estimeni tragedy. It's been
another ANC legacy of incompetence, greed, and shittery.
The Gauteng Health Department has admitted that it is still ailing, that's the word that they've used. So this was contained in a response from the department after several service providers, these were mostly law firms, withdrew from defending lawsuits arising from alleged medical negligence. The department now faces 1.1 billion rands in claims. Now, according to the City Press, they've established that the department has been bombarded with claims from lawyers and doctors and other specialists whose invoices remained unpaid. And City Press has also seen a memorandum that was signed by at least 8 law firms in which they accuse the department of having failed to honor their promise to pay within the agreed 30-day period. So in one incident, lawyers assisting the department in the Estimeni tragedy threatened to withdraw from dealing with queries arising from the inquest into the deaths and to withhold information on the records. In a letter to Gauteng's health MEC Bandile Masuku, the law firm said it was appointed to defend alleged medical negligence cases instituted against the department. 3 years later, and this is still a thing. This is still a thing. Whenever the story is brought up in the news and whenever we see this, I just think about the families and how I don't think one can easily get closure in something like this.
Yeah,
well, I'm glad you do, because the politicians don't. So at least someone's thinking about the families.
Well, it's just sad. And then the last story that you need to know this morning before we get into the sport. Well, SAMHSA, that's the South African Maritime Safety Authority, on Sunday confirmed that an investigation has been launched after up to 400 litres of oil spilled into the PEC.
Ooh,
this is the Port Elizabeth Sea. Sorry, I just realized
it sounded like another abbreviation, the PEC.
Port Elizabeth Sea, while a vessel was refueling. So in an official statement, the SAMHSA spokesperson said, the spillage has been contained to the water and is not expected to reach the beach or islands. A company contracted to assess the effect of the spill has confirmed that there are no oil traces in the water. So between 200 and 400 liters of oil spilled in the port of NGQURA.
Ngora.
That one. 20 kilometers northeast of Port Elizabeth at around 4:40 a.m. on Saturday, while bunkering services company SA Marine Fuels was fueling up. The cause of the accident was overflow. SA Marine Fuels immediately activated an oil spillage control exercise to contain the oil spread. I hope they aren't just saying this to make the public feel better, and I hope this really is the case, because we know how horrible the effects of an oil spillage might be. So if they say that it's all under control, then we're glad to hear it. And so
it makes me think how often it's happening and we don't get to hear about it.
Let's trust though that there are proper processes, like the authorities and, you know, SAMHSA, and that's the reason why they announced it, because they have to. So yeah, those are the 5 things that you need to know this morning. Some good, some bad, some in between. And let's get into the sport. Ben, what do you have this morning?
Well, Bafana did the impossible. The Proteas did the impossible.
Wow.
It all happening, and the Hagawada couldn't do the impossible.
Oh, shame.
Yeah, so after scoring just one goal and winning just one match, somehow Bafana found the backdoor of the backdoor into the AFCON round of last 16. For their sins, though, of being mostly shite during the pool stages, they got up to play against Egypt. Now, Egypt's tournament favourites, Egypt, playing at home with Mo Salah, who essentially is more famous than the Sphinx, if you think about it, in modern Egyptian peopleness. Anyway, bugger all good he did, because Egypt couldn't score a goal. But Lorch, oh, what a goal that was. Just counter-attack play for Bafana. Just like back in the day when kids would play with just gay abandon, tossing the ball around the field and running with to their heart's content. And there it was here, 84th minute or somewhere close to that. Lorch put it in the back of the net and Bafana were 1-0 up. And then that was it. Egypt was stunned. They were absolutely stunned. And now they're out. So very, very sad. The Egyptian coaching staff were instantly fired, all of them thrown out on their ass, and the president of the Egyptian Football Association resigned. Such was the shame. Such was the shame of losing to Bafana 1-0 that they all basically now have different job opportunities, maybe or maybe not coming to them. So, Algeria have also gone through. They beat Guinea 3-0. Madagascar, they beat the Democratic Republic of Congo in penalties 4-2 after 2-2.
I actually saw a bit of that game.
Yeah, it was a thrilling goal there for Madagascar.
It was the commentating that got my attention. It's like, really? quite
seriously animated.
Very animated, yeah.
Nigeria, they beat Cameroon 3-2. And then Uganda, they lost to Senegal. So if you are from Uganda, your AFCON ends there. It's back to homophobia and general unruliness. And then Morocco, they lost to Benin. Yeah. There's two more matches to look forward to in the round of last 16. And I'll tell you what they are. They involve Mali. They'll be taking on Côte d'Ivoire. But don't say Côte d'Ivoire because you're not French. Say Ivory Coast. And that will be taking place today at 6 o'clock. And then Ghana, my second, third, maybe second favorite African country, is taking on Tunisia. So Tunisia are like the only North Africans kind of still really in the mix here. You wouldn't have thought that, would you, Leanne, going to this tournament?
I mean, just judging from previous years.
Exactly. Sort of home ground advantage, all those kinds of things. So Bafana Bafana, in the next round, we'll take on Nigeria. And that will be Wednesday at 9 o'clock if you are looking for this next match. And it's just so nice to finally have a winning team. I mean, everything in South Africa nowadays is just so loserish. As in, we lose things all the time. Loser politicians, losing economy, losing sports teams. But hey, this weekend, Bafana Bafana turned that around. If you haven't seen Andre Arens' video on Twitter yet, go ahead and watch that. That's just a whole different kind of... yes, it's been nice to just say that. And the Proteas, they finally batted first in a big game. They finally got their stuff together. And they finally posted a score that was worth defending. And defend they did. They scored 325, Faf du Plessis with a tremendous century. Rusty van der Westhuizen coming pretty close. He got a personal best, I think 95 and 96. And the Aussies, well, they didn't do it. Imran Tahir had a very fantastic sort of send-off. Only one wicket in the end, but it was a crucial one first up. With Aaron Finch going. David Warner, that little shy who cheated with the sandpaper, he got 100, but it was to be in vain. Is that right? Do it in vain?
Yes.
Well, it was in vain, that 100. His wife congratulated him on Twitter. That was pretty much the only highlight of his day.
Oh.
yeah, shout out Candace. But yeah, so Australia lose, but that's fine. They still go through, but now they'll play against England and then India, who beat Sri Lanka earlier in the day, will take on New Zealand. So those are your semis that will be taking place this week in the Cricket World Cup. Speaking of cricket, Otis Gibson, he was the coach of the Proteas in this very unsuccessful and just failure-ridden campaign. He says he still wants his job because he loves his job. Well, no shit, Otis. We all like to be employed. Otherwise, we're going to not make money. So he wants to stay on, citing the fact that this World Cup didn't go so well because he only had 18 months to prepare for it. Loads of injuries, a couple of guys taking cold packs, and it was just unfortunate. But he says he's already preparing for the next big thing for the Proteas, which is India, the tour of India in September. Now that means his contract ends in September, but the next best thing, big thing for the Proteas is September. So imagine if you're going to take over and you're just going to become the Proteas coach, and your first assignment is India in India. I mean, that's pretty much like running into a combine harvester in underwear. No chance of anything good happening there. So anyway, these are decisions that cricket South Africa has to make, and they're tough decisions, but that's what happens when your back is against the wall. Just ask anyone who's been to Elton John's house at a pool party.
Ben!
Yeah. Elton, yeah.
That escalated so quickly.
Tough out there. The Tour de France started over the weekend. It was all around the beautiful Brussels in Belgium. Stunning weather. There was a king, there was Eddie Merckx, there was other people, and it was just a joyous occasion. There were chateaus all over the place, and some really nice architecture. Anyway, Mike Tennyson, he is currently in the lead because his team, Jumbo, I think something, Jumbo Visma, they won the team time trial yesterday.
The team is called Jumbo? The
team is called Jumbo Visma.
Okay.
Yeah, so there was a opening stage, which was just a little brisk 192 kilometers around Brussels. Unfortunately, there was a bit of a crash there, which involved defending champion Geraint Jones. I think that's his name. He's Welsh. Yeah, and then there's the team time trial where the Jumbo team just cleaned up. So they absolutely shattered everyone's hopes of winning the team time trial. But don't look too much into this early days, of course. The good teams. And the thing about the Tour de France is that I know it's cycling. Most people think it's quite an individual sport. But it's actually one of the great team sports, tactically and everything else, execution-wise. And how these teams conduct themselves and how they put people in certain places, it really is quite a science. Women's World Cup final of the FIFA Women's World Cup final. America, they were always going to win that one, and yes, they did. 2-0, they beat the Netherlands woman. Megan Rapinoe, Rapinoe. She's become quite a controversial figure because she's obviously taken the low-hanging fruit of saying Donald Trump's a prick and she won't go to the White House. We know that old chestnut. Anyway, she's one of the people who subscribes to that. And obviously that's a side story people jump at. But the important thing is she's actually a damn good footballist. And she won the Golden Ball, the Golden Boot, and pretty much was the center of attention. And she's 34, so quite long in the tooth as well. So good for her. But no big surprises there. America were always going to come. They win that one. Of course, they won it in 2015. They had a bit of a lean patch, 1999 before that, and then 1991. But they have been the most successful in the sport of women's football. Which, Sia, I know you're going to ask, is that the same as men's football? Because you're a bit of a sexist. And yes, it is.
Aren't I just so sexist, Ben?
Some pretty sad news. And look, I know it's Monday, so the sport is a bit bigger than usual. But pretty sad news that Pakistan under 19 cricketers are out here currently in SA at the moment, and they absolutely wiped the floor with their South African opponents. 7-0 series clean sweep. There were 7 matches, and the Pakistan under 19s won all 7 of them. Like, how cuck have you got to be decked that hard? Like, surely it's hard to win everything because you get bored of winning. The incentive's not there anymore. 7 out of 7. That is just absolutely horrendous, and it really is a bit of a concern for future generations coming through. Like Pakistan, sure, they're a talented nation, but you got to think that they can win 1 out of 7. Gosh. Anyway, the Hagawadath, they also had a bit of a tough time at things.
I've just looked up Hagawadath because I needed to know what it was spelled like. It looks like jaguars, right?
Sure, to the uneducated.
Jaguares.
Yeah, sure.
Did you hear that, Leanne? To the uneducated.
Yes. But it makes sense.
With all the pomp and ceremony of a big final, albeit in Christchurch where nothing happens, only about 10,000 people are in this small little stadium, the Hagawadath ran out there as Africa's big hope. Well, not really, but of course we'll try to claim anything. they won the African Conference and they made it through to the final. And they were pretty good. They were plucky in the beginning. They were very dedicated in the defense and they were quite direct in attack. But ultimately the Crusaders are going to win. That's what happened. They were just that much better. And they just eased away. Richie Maunga played brilliantly as a fly half. And, that was it. They won by 16. So, no big surprises. 3 successive titles in a row for the Crusaders. They're the best team in the Southern Hemisphere. Yesterday in the golf, the 3M Open, Matthew Wolf, he's played, this was his 3rd pro start, and he won. This guy's got the weirdest swing. It looks like he's flotting, swatting bees and then tries to hit a golf ball in between all of that. But he won. He beat Bryson DeChambeau and Colin McIlwaya by 1 shot. He eagled the last hole and with that is now super rich. And he's only 20. And 3 starts for your first professional win. Absolutely amazing. John Rahm won the Irish Open for the 2nd time in 3 years. And finally we go into the 2nd week of Wimbledon, which means that all the sort of best players who should be there are kind of there. I know some of the top seeds fall out, but this is it. This is the business part, the 4th round onwards. Now, Barty, the Australian, she's the number 1 seed in the women's draw. She'll be taking on Risk. How would you say it? Risk.
Risque.
Well, that's it.
There should be a little accent on the E.
Yeah, well, there's no accent. It's Risk.
That's bad writing.
Bad writing for your name there. And then if whoever wins that one takes on the winner, Serena Williams versus Suarez Navarro. And then on the bottom side of the draw, well, the top seeds have fallen out here terribly. We've got Zhang versus Yastremska. And then the winner of that will take on Halep versus Coco Gauff. Now, she, of course, is only 15 here, but she's just getting stuck in there. 15 years old. She's in the 4th round.
She's so cool in my books right now.
Yeah, and that's the bottom side of the draw. In the men's, Federer is still there, of course. He's in the bottom side. He's the 2nd seed. He'll be taking on an Italian gent called Berrettini. On the top side, Djokovic, number 1 seed, will be taking on Humbert, French guy. It's still so much to play for. The last week, very, very exciting. And it's a great time of year in England, of course. That's it for your sport on this Monday.
Well, thank you, Ben.
You're welcome, sir.
A message from Carl just before we go into the money shot. Carl says, why do we call Otis Gibson Otis? There are 2 T's. So it's Artis.
Otis. Yeah, it's true.
We must
get
this right. Also, he must fuck off. Useless spell end from Carl.
Well, Carl, 2 fair points, I guess.
I'm just conveying the message here. I don't know what was going on there. All right, let's get into some finance news with Anthea. Good morning, Anthea. How are you?
Good morning, Sia. I'm very well, thanks.
Awesome. Well, let's get a bit of your music going on here. I don't think we've played this one in a while, actually.
Nah, it's been a while. Anyway, look, let's just start with a big question.
Oh, what is the big question?
Anthea, why didn't you call your book I Work Hard for My Money?
Very
actually,
good,
that
Ben.
Is so true.
I should have called it that.
Because I would have drawn
it. I Work Hard for Your Money.
You know, that sounds a bit try-hard.
Anthea, that's really. That sounds...
Could
but
be
you did,
misconstrued.
You did see the back cover, right? Where Gareth quoted.
Yes,
he said. She
yeah, but I mean,
like,
that's just Gareth quoting. I mean, we're talking titles here. We're talking your legacy here.
Then I would have been a real bestseller, hey? Yeah, that title.
Oh, that's what happens.
Or put an F in the word.
That's what happens when you ask me for advice.
Oh, wow.
That is exactly the problem.
Also, very humble there, Ben. That's
Ben, what are we buying today? What stocks are we buying today? I'm just asking for advice.
Anthea, you've got to prepare your own show. Come on.
All right.
I'm respecting
the most. Let me tell you.
What are we buying today, Anthea?
Oh, I'm not sure what we're buying today because the market's definitely going to be lower. Asia is down between 1.5% and 2.5%, and 2.5% in Asia is a big move. I think everybody's worried about these trade wars. The other thing we're worried about, funnily enough, this is a strange one, is that U.S. non-farm payrolls came in at 224,000 on Friday versus an expected 160,000. Now, you'd think that was a good thing because it shows that the U.S. economy is growing or that they're creating jobs and employing people. But actually what's happened now is that the market is worried that the U.S. Fed may not cut interest rates because last month when we saw the non-farm payrolls, the unemployment number, we thought that the U.S. Fed was saying, well, actually, you know, the economy is not growing as fast as we'd like to. We're going to stimulate by cutting rates. And so, unfortunately, that changes things a little bit. Trading volumes were really low last week because it was Independence Day on Thursday. But we did manage to get the rand below 14 against the U.S. dollar on Thursday for the first time since April. Mm. A bit of a risk on trade for emerging markets, so everybody buying emerging market currencies. But then, unfortunately, the rand weakened again on Friday to close at 14.22. And this really was all about the non-farm payrolls and the worry around interest rates and slowing growth, global growth.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And then in Europe, we saw the announcement that Christine Lagarde will take up the position of head of the European Central Bank.
This is amazing. What do you think about it?
I think it's fantastic. I think she's the perfect person for the job. Unfortunately for her, though, I think she's been given a hospital pass by Super Mario, as we call him, Draghi. So as it is at the moment, you know, interest rates are pretty much at zero in Europe. In fact, in Germany, they're in negative, so you pay the bank to hold money for you. No, isn't that weird, eh? The inflation is well below target, and really, she's known for being a dove, and the only real kind of tool in her arsenal or bow in her quiver is the interest rate, and if interest rate's already kind of zero below, then what else is she going to do? So things are not going to be easy for her, but she's the perfect person to handle it.
You know, coming into a position like that, and there's so much glory attached to it, but at the same time, that glory will fade away in 2 seconds, and people go, well, what are you going to do?
Exactly.
So it isn't an easy position to take up at all.
No, but she's the right person, no doubt.
And we also had some great news here for NASPERS South Africa with a new appointment.
Yeah, Phuthi Mayanyele Dabengwa was appointed as NASPERS South Africa's CEO. So you may know her. She used to head up Cyril Ramaphosa's Shanduka.
Yes.
Before she went off and started her own private equity business called Sigma. Now, I'm not sure what she's going to do with Sigma. As far as I know, they've been going for about 4 or 5 years. So the same as Cartesian Capital, my business. But I think she's got other people to run that. So she'll be in charge of the Naspers' kind of flagship South African units, the Foundry, so Naspers Foundry, and Naspers Labs, basically the local private equity business or social impact businesses run here. I think it's a great position, and she's so smart. She really is the right person to run that.
Yeah.
Two fantastic women, really, being promoted. And then Reuters is reporting that our government is considering swapping Eskom's debt for government bonds or ring-fenced in a special account.
Anthea, what does this mean?
I know, I say that with that like, you know, this is not good tone of voice, right? So the problem with Eskom is that we already, the government, when I say the government, remember that the government runs on our tax money, right?
Yeah.
Let's not forget that.
Let's call it what it is.
Exactly. So the government has already pledged 230 billion rand in aid of Eskom. And we already guarantee so much of the state-owned enterprise debt that, quite frankly, it leaves South Africa, the country, in a rather precarious position. We're way over indebted, like just far too much. And I think Moody's and the ratings agencies are cottoning onto this, because Moody's did warn that we have to watch our debt, and if we don't, they're going to downgrade us to junk status. Remember, they're the only rating agency that at this stage have not downgraded us to full junk status, I'm afraid. So yeah, it sounds great. Oh, you know, the government's going to ring-fence this debt or put it in a special account so that it can't be touched or it can't impact them. But actually, they are where the buck stops. And so there's no matter how they ring-fence it, if you're going to bail out Eskom, the only person to do it or people to do it is government. Taxpayer money.
Yikes. And where does, that just keeps on going on and on with the drama.
Talk about going on and on and drama. We need to talk about...
Beautiful segue with this mess going on with Trevor Manuel.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
What is that all about? Peter Moyo and Trevor Manuel fighting. I mean, this is just another level, right? So now, Moyo has accused Trevor Manuel of having ulterior motives and acting in bad faith after Trevor Manuel, who's the chairman of Old Mutual South Africa, first suspended him and then fired him. And they're accusing Moyo of having outside interests and basically using Old Mutual to fund his other company or, you know, to pass deals onto Moyo's company. Moyo has now come back and said, well, actually, Trevor Manuel has done exactly the same, because he was in charge of Rothschild, which is a financial advisory business. And when Old Mutual separated and sold off their asset management business in the UK called Quilter now, which is also listed on the JSE, by the way, he made sure that Rothschild got a cut of the advisory fee. So,
don't you think this is a little petty?
Well, actually, I think petty. Yeah, it seems a bit petty. But
the way
they're
going about it.
Well, Peter Moyo has taken this to court, so I'm not sure that means it's petty. But my concern with it is that Peter Moyo has so much detail that actually it feels like there's something in it, like smoke and fire and all that. So it's not just Peter Moyo fighting back, you know, and saying, you unfairly dismissed me. It's a bit more than that, I think.
Oh my
goodness. And that would be very disappointing. Because, you know, we all like Trevor Manuel and we think he's kind of upstanding gentleman.
Are you surprised by these allegations, whether they're true or not? But, you know, smoke and fire theory. Are you surprised by the smoke?
I would be disappointed in Trevor Manuel if that did happen. Very disappointed. He should know better, basically. I can see how it happens. It's so easy when you're working for a company and you want a deal and you're trying to kind of garner revenue and do deals, and you know somebody who knows somebody and you put them in touch with each other, and you say, oh, by the way, you know, this would be a great help for your business. But Trevor Manuel should know that if he's chairman of Old Mutual and he works for Rothschild, that he can't blur the lines. Like, and that's the problem in South Africa at the moment, I think, and that's where corruption starts, is it doesn't start by somebody giving you a bag of 200 rand bills. It starts with, you know, I work for this company, we need to generate revenue, we've got a great advisory business on the side, let me introduce you to another company where I'm sitting on the board that needs advice.
You see, we don't realize that because it's so much part of the culture. It's like, yeah, exactly. Of course, I'm just connecting the two of you. I'm helping you. Oh, yeah, it's the connections.
That's exactly right. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I had a very similar situation where somebody I know quite well said, she was talking to somebody else, and she said, you know, when they put out a tender, because this person had said they hadn't won the tender, and she said, well, when you put out a tender or when you see a tender being put out, when you submit your proposal for the tender, maybe go and speak to the people who have put out the tender and say to them, like, you know, you've got to think about quality and this is what we offer and this is how things go, and maybe think about it like this. Actually, no, that's interference. And I know you want to win the tender, but it's interference of the tender process, and you actually should stay away from it. But in South Africa, it's just normal practice to kind of desperately win the business, and it's okay to say things like, you know, I'm more BE than you, and so I should get your tender.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually not okay.
Should this get even more legal activity? Do you think this is going to be a bit of a wake-up call?
You're talking about Peter Moyo and Trevor Manuel.
A wake-up call in the way people operate.
No, because I think there's already so many examples of it in the news, but people haven't cottoned on. I think we need to openly have the discussion like you and I are having now. Like, don't interfere with a tender process. If you're a chairman of a board, or if you just sit on a board and your company wants business, then don't do it. You have fiduciary duties. So I sit on two boards. I sit on my old school board, and I sit on an early care foundation board. And I manage money. And both of those organizations have cash that they need managed. But I will not manage the money, even though I would appreciate the fees in my business, because I want to be objective.
That's honest. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and people just, yeah. So they're so most people would say, well, that's fine. Bring me the business. I'll manage it. But you can't.
And I think you are very right by saying he should know better. Like, Trevor Manuel should know better. I think it seems very basic to even have this conversation of, like, guys, you actually can't be doing this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once you have certain years of experience, once you've seen many, many things, you should know better. Mm-hmm. So it's quite
it's
a
juvenile. It's hard when the economy is struggling and your business is struggling and, you know, fighting for every last cent of revenue to stay on the absolute straight and narrow.
Right.
But it's something South African, as South Africans, I think we must learn.
Well, and Anthea, can we help out one of our listeners who sent us an email, Jason Thorne? So Jason mailed us and said, hi, Gareth, Cliff Show team. I'm one of those silent listeners, been with you guys from the beginning. Thank you. But seeing that I only listen to the podcast, I feel like I'm a bit too late to comment on things as they happen. However, this time I figured Cliff Central could give me some good advice, more specifically Anthea. No offense to C and Ben. I don't know why we were specifically mentioning this, Jason, but moving on very swiftly. I'm trying to persuade some people around me to stay away from what seems to be a too-good-to-be-true investment. Jason then says, basically what's making this an attractive investment to them is that from a 2,500 Rand investment into carrot bars, they are reporting to get an ROI of 1.5 million rands by 2023. So that's in 4 years' time. To me, that sounds insanely ridiculous. That's more than 10,000% interest in the first year. So please, can you get Anthea to confirm my skepticism on the money shot? Love the show. Keep it up. Regards, okay. Jason.
Jason, thanks so much for your email. Of course, I'd never heard of this company called Carrot Bar, so I had to go and look them up. Carrot spelled K-A-R-A-T, like as in diamond.
Jewelry, yes.
So Carrot Bars was founded in 2011, headquartered in Stuttgart, Germany. The founder is a guy called Harold Seiss, who has been in the financial industry since the 1980s. He claims he's done real estate, insurance, finance, all sorts, precious metals. And Carrot Bars basically is an MLM business, so multi-level marketing business. Some of us call it pyramid schemes. And did that give it away?
Pyramids are made up of levels, multiple levels.
Multi-level.
That is so diplomatic of Anthea. Some of us call it.
Or it's also called referral marketing. So basically, they will pay you to get somebody else to not invest, buy their product. And their product is gold bars or slices of gold or pieces of gold. So you can see where this is going, right? The more people you introduce, the more money you make. Multi-level marketing. Mm-hmm. Pyramid scheme? Referral business? Okay. There's quite a lot on the internet about this, and carrot bars have in fact come up against a couple of governments in the past, Canada being one of them. You know, in the Fraud Prevention Month, they were mentioned and all this sort of thing. And I think I've given you enough clues, right? So I don't know if Carrot Bars is legitimate or not. It seems like they actually do run a good business. But are you going to make a return on investment of 10,000% in 4 years? Mm. Too good to be true? Mm. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Well, and that's the truth. Courtesy of Anthea. Well, Anthea, thank you so much for that advice.
Guys. Have a good week.
Have an awesome week.
Thank you.
And then wherever you are, in all good bookstores, Anthea's book is out. There we go. Just casual plug there for Anthea. And it's now time to get our Bitcoin update for the day and also some Bitcoin advice with our segment Beyond Bitcoin. We have Sean Saunders standing by on Skype. Good morning, Sean. How are you? Let's get Sean on the line. Well, he'll be giving us some advice for this week. Let's try him again. Good morning, Sean.
It's the Skype rejection noise.
Oh, he rejected us. That's a shame. You know what? Actually, I know what we can do. We can get to... is Sean on the line now? Let's try him now.
Huh? Oh, I love the song.
Uh-huh. There we go.
Ben's clicking his fingers.
No, do you know what? I actually got some notes from Sean, and I think they're quite pertinent to talk about this week. He wants to talk about emotional biases when it comes to cryptocurrency. So it's about like what we hear and what has been said about certain things before we invest. So I think that's really something that I want to pick his brain about. So we're just struggling to get him on the line. I think let us wrap up part one for now, and then we'll come back with some more news. We'll actually also do said by sea a little later as well.
Yeah.
And then,
oh, what a treat.
Oh, no, you were not expecting that. We'll also do some said by sea and also get to Sean Saunders with Beyond Bitcoin. This is the Gareth Cliff Show.
This is CliffCentral.com.